Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What is love?
Love is the most important thing on Earth, especially to a man and a woman.
Oh, we do have mates. When it is time to increase the herd, my provider will select one for me.
On Earth, we select our own mate. Someone we care for. On Earth, men and women live together, help each other, make each other happy.
I do not think your words are allowed.
Hey, let's start the podcast now. I think it behooves us to start the podcast.
Oh, man.
I'm Patrick, that's Dan, and there's Jesse over there.
Incredible.
I'm pointing at them. You can't see them, but I'm pointing at them.
Open us up, Space Channel.
I did that too late.
Podcast. This is a podcast that we've been doing for quite some time. Mm-hmm. We refer to it, generally speaking, we refer to it as the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking.
Generally speaking. That's how most people refer to it.
I think that's what it's actually called.
Yeah, but some people are like IGST or,
oh, yes,
or yeah. Those guys. You know?
I will not do it.
Have you listened to those guys?
I will not do it.
This is episode.
There's some funny folks.
This is episode 214, not 100, 214.
Oh, man.
We've done 213 previous episodes. This is 214 of the official episodes.
Not
of the, a bunch of bonus episodes, too. But yes, okay, Star Trek, the Gamesters of Triskelion. That's what we'll be discussing this week.
Triskelion.
Welcome to Triskelion.
Which
Triskelion.
Growing up, this always caused me a problem, because in my brain, I've seen this episode a number of times, but in my brain, we're going to read it in the text, even though I know it's Triskelion in the show. My brain wants to say Triskelion.
Triskelion.
Not even Triskelion, which is the more other way people like to pronounce it, is Triskelion as opposed to Triskelion.
I never even considered that.
Because you shouldn't misread it as Triskelion. Triskelion.
No, I mean, now that you say it, I can see it.
Yeah.
you said it, so I see it. You see? You hear? You said it, so I see it.
If you see something, say something. Okay, that's what we're going to discuss week. The Gamesters
Triskelion.
Of Triskelion. And there's a lot to discuss. So much to discuss. But.
Fascinating.
But first, a couple of news-em-ups.
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 They're on the rad.
No, we're not doing that.
News-em-ups.
We discussed that slogan. The news-em-ups is fine. We're not going with the slogan that you've come up to.
News-em-ups. They're on the red.
No.
And Jesse, you're supposed to laugh or go like, yeah. I'm supposed to go news-em-ups, and you go, yeah.
No, none of this choreographed nonsense.
Because that's what you were doing before, and I was all frustrated at first, but then I realized, no, that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. I go, news-em-ups, and then you're like, yeah. And then I'm like, they're on the red.
I'll just explain to the audience, none of this is accurate. Dan's been pushing this whole slogan. And Jesse and I are not cool with it.
Does it like make you feel a little weird or something?
Just don't even worry about it.
Does it make you feel like a little like uncomfortable?
It does make me feel a little uncomfortable. I don't like it. But news em ups I like. I like news em ups. We're gonna trademark.
What are you worried about?
and don't worry
about it.
This week's news em ups new Star Trek is over for a little bit. That won't matter to you if you're listening to this otherwise evergreen podcast many years in the future, just plucking it out of the many hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of episodes of the Sky Star Trek podcast. You may have selected this one, and you will not care that over the previous weeks, we were discussing the fourth season of Star Trek, Lower Decks.
No, sir.
So... we're not talking about new Star Trek for a little while because We don't know when the next new Star Trek's coming around. It shouldn't be too long.
Nobody knows.
We expect Discovery, the fifth and last season of Discovery.
Next year.
Should start early in the next year, so probably not too long of a wait. But a longer wait than we've become accustomed to in recent years, because it's been just wall-to-wall Star Trek, new Star Trek. Not all the time, but almost all the time. Sometimes even overlapping, which that was stressful when Picard and Discovery were like
overlapping. It was all up ons.
Oh, it was a lot.
It was all up ons. That was pretty intense. And they kept doing it at the last minute.
Yes, and not telling us what the deal was.
They didn't think of us podcasters. Why were they? They need to figure their market out better, because us podcasters, we're really fucking important. All right, we're doing God's work.
And a brief look at the podcasting environment will demonstrate that basically all Star Trek fans have a podcast.
Right.
All right, Jesse's having a little bit of a sneezing.
Sorry
fit
about
over
that.
Here. No, it's all right, Jesse. It's all part of the
that
show.
That might be it.
It's all part of the show. Jesse is a traditional multi sneezer. There you go.
Stop it! Stop it!
So yes, Jesse. We all know multi sneezers in our. We all have multi sneezers in our lives, and that's Jesse's the multi sneezer for us. Okay. Back to the old podcast. So yes. Anyway. Stick with us. New Star Trek is over for a bit, but it'll be back soon. And in the meantime, just a reminder for folks who may not be aware, bounce around the whole Star Trek universe. Dan plays sound clips. He doesn't usually play the entire fucking episode.
There's a lot of good music hits in TOS that I had to get down.
There are. Okay. Touche. Mm-hmm. You're correct.
TOS has some great, like isolated music. They're usually a bed of, like, doors whooshing open and closed, but
yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good, like,
because even
interesting...
those are, even those sound effects are good. But regardless, new Star Trek
it's
over.
Very unique.
Old Star Trek for now. We'll bounce around. Dan's got an algorithm.
Dan's got an algorithm. Blah, blah, blah.
Picks the topics. So just to stick with us. Watch the shows. The ones we pick are going to be fun. We'll discuss them. It'll be a good time. Mm-hmm. The other bit of news is that the SAG-AFTRA strike has concluded.
Incredible.
Yeah, which is really good. So we're excited about that. That should get
admirable.
Jesus Christ. That should get things back on track. For Star Trek, as well as a number of other television programs and movies and other things that we enjoy. And with luck now, the creators and performers and everybody with the writer strike and the actors and everything, we know not everyone's going to be paid as much as they ought to be, but at least hopefully more people are getting a better deal. So that's excellent. Excited to hear about that.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Good. Okay. We did have one voice recording. Did you want to hear a voice recording?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We're starting to get more. Just a reminder, if you want to send in a voice recording, you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record, and you can send us a voice message.
Record your voice.
Up to 90 seconds.
Captain.
It can be.
Why not 120?
It can be a question or a comment or salutations or seeking advice. Or offering advice, whatever you like. We encourage that. And this is interesting. So this is going to be, this is a voicemail from what I believe may be our youngest fan.
Open a subspace channel.
All right, I will. This is from Jeremy.
Hi, my name is Jeremy. And I'm 9 years old. And I love Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy.
So thank you for doing so many podcasts. I've listened to them all.
It's a lot.
And my favorite parts of the podcast.
Is he from New York
when
or not?
Dan talks about eating a big, gross pile of shit.
Okay.
But
yeah,
I wanted to know, in real life, does Dan actually eat the shit? And if he does he eat it like pudding or like scooping it up and eating it like an apple? I can't figure it out.
I'd like
so
to know that.
If you could tell
too.
Me, that would be great. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Off the air. Yeah, wow. Jeremy's a young kid who says off the air. Jeremy, how about you come say that to my face? Okay? Come here and say that to my face. Then we'll talk.
I like the idea, the concept of eating poop like an apple.
I don't think I like that. I don't even like the idea of eating an onion like an apple.
Ooh, an apple's great.
What were you eating for it to come out like an apple?
Yeah, exactly. Right. You need to drink more water.
Yeah.
Because you're dehydrated.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Jeremy. Dan's, of course, Jeremy's not going to be forthcoming with a response to that, but we do appreciate it. And again, anyone who wants to send something in, ScottStarTrek.com/record.
I couldn't tell if Jeremy was from New York or something, because at some point he was just like, as he started going, I just like to know. I don't know.
You never know.
I don't know.
Right. Sometimes little kids have that voice. That's yeah. Sort of all.
It's true.
Like kind of New Yorky.
It's true. Sort of. The New Yorky voice.
Sort of drop their R's a lot, you know.
Think we'll ever meet Jeremy?
I do not know.
Jeremy, I want you to meet me, and I'm not going to hurt you, I promise. I just want to meet you and be your friend.
I'm not going to hurt you, I promise.
All right.
I promise there will be no violence.
It's a new feature of the It's Got Star Trek podcast where Dan meets young children in the street.
And promises not to hurt them.
All right. Anyway, yes, if you want to send something in, itsgotstartrek.com/record. All right. And I guess the last thing to announce would be that... in the second break, we'll have a little bit of trivia related to obedience collars in fiction. Obedience collars.
Oh.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's get into this wacky-ass episode of Star Trek.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Amok Time is the first episode of this season, and it has the same fight music.
Yeah.
And it also.
It's like the classic fight music.
Yeah. And they also have a similar. Would you guys define what they had, those spears, as pole arms? Would those be defined as pole arms?
Kind of.
Yeah. This is Jesse's area.
Yeah. Because.
I would say. That's
medieval weaponry.
So in the Amok time, their pole arm had like. Yeah. Had,
You're saying it all weird on purpose.
No, that's how I say it.
It's fine.
I'm hungry. Do you have any mayonnaise, Jesse? I like to just eat mayonnaise sometimes.
Affectation central.
Okay. Affectation central indeed. I don't know why that's confusing my brain for some reason. In the Amok time, they had a pole arm it had a swingy, slicey axe thing, like you see, like a swinging axe that's going to cut someone's head off. It had like one of those blades. Yeah, and the other side had some kind of bludgeon on
Crazy
it.
Crazy hook.
Had some bludgeon device. Bludgeon is a bludgeon, right?
Bludgeon.
Bludgeon.
That can be nouned, right?
Neil Dudgeon.
Can a noun be verbed? Can the word noun be
verbed?
No,
that is a noun.
Yeah. But these ones in this episode,
by a bludgeon.
One side had a dagger and the other side had some kind of like fish grapple or net grapple or some kind of grapple.
It looked like one of them fish hooks with the four hooks on it.
Yeah, that's what I was getting. Yeah, totally. That's what
I think
was.
I didn't catch all that. I was trying not to pay too close attention to the weapons because in the high definition, they don't look particularly scary.
No.
So it's like best
no,
to sort of,
goofy.
You only want to kind of catch the weapons out the corner of your eye. That's the trick to watching TOS sometimes because you got some great Ooh. Stories and some really interesting ideas, often well portrayed.
Often wrong soon.
Not always, but often well portrayed. But sometimes you got to sort of squint your eyes a little bit to not get taken out of the story.
The fight choreography was especially awful.
I don't know. I thought it was awesome.
I was really curious because I figured there might be this divide between you two, Dan and Jesse on the fight choreography.
I can see the someone having the opinion that it was awful. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I think that was one of the best parts.
Moments that were okay, but like when he like threw the pole arm and stabbed
terrible.
Big dude. But like, especially the first fight where like they first get there, it's just like, it's awful.
What I thought was like funny was when
it's like they're not even like trying.
I think at some point it was either Kirk or Shauna like stabbed someone with the blade end of the thing, and it didn't go in. I think it was Kirk to Klug, the big dude, the big orc looking dude.
Oh.
But like they stabbed him with it in the stomach, but it didn't actually go in his stomach. He like held his stomach as if he'd just gotten kicked in the stomach. It's like, no, you just got jabbed with the dagger. Yeah. But then that was right after that is when Kirk threw it that you're talking about. And it actually went in him that time. And somehow both of those came out terribly. I don't know. Maybe that's part of what I liked about it. But there was also some because William Shatner actually does. some impressive stage combat stuff.
Oh yeah, he's good.
Because I'm trying to remember what episode we saw where he was down on a planet, and at the end of the planet there was a fight between him and some other. I don't think that was Pike.
At the end of a planet?
At the end of the episode. Sorry, they were at the. That would be much awesomer if it was at the end of a planet.
Well, that's like in Star Trek 3. He's sort of at the end of the planet with Krug.
Yeah,
and they're fighting.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like that.
Sort of. Metaphorically, the end of the planet.
Well, I was talking about an episode. Anyways, I can't remember the episode, but he was. I think it was him, and it wasn't Pike. But I remember no, because it's Kirk's shirt got ripped, and he was fighting some guy, and he was doing some awesome hip tosses, and you got to see some of those hip tosses in this episode. He really liked the jumping front kick in this episode. He did it twice to Klug.
Yes.
Once before the break that they had. They had like some kind of rest interval.
Yes.
15 trisecs.
Yeah.
There's a trisecs. Everything was tri because they have three sons and
And
that was the thing is it was so the tri was so overt and they kept mentioning it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize it's all about trying to be part of it's part of the construction of the metaphor that this planet has three suns, so presumably it never gets dark, but it is still a quote unquote dark planet in that the people have no rights and there's slavery and all this other stuff. Kirk makes a reference to this as being the darkest place I've ever been.
Oh, interesting. I never.
I guess the try everything and having two sons was not sufficient.
And he's from Iowa.
Yeah. And he's from Iowa, but the fights, I actually was kind of expecting that you guys might have a difference of opinion because I think Jesse prefers when the fights are a little bit more like practical and weird. And I think Dan, you're more into like just the awesomeness which I kind of lean towards too, where I'm like, okay, this looks silly, including the part where like Chekhov at one point is fighting, I think the Klug guy and like Chekhov waits for a second to let the knife go up to his neck.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like looking at the guy like, okay, put the knife up to my neck.
There was a part where like, it looked like all of them, including Shauna and the other two, and Uhura, and I guess it was Tamun. I guess those were the three ones.
Yeah.
They all stopped what they were doing and started watching Kirk fight that molester Lars. And then like,
wait, what?
Yeah.
Lars the molester.
Yeah.
Like he looked like one, and then he.
wait. Which one? Just so I know who I'm
Lars.
Talking about. Are you talking about the kind of the creepy looking guy?
Yeah, that's why he's the molester. Yeah,
is he the one who?
Yes, with Uhura.
Oh my God, we gotta get to that.
I mean,
let's not jump ahead. Yeah, because that deserves its own conversation.
It does.
But with the fights,
crazy
fights,
and then there was a part where Chekhov. I couldn't tell what was going on because it looked like he was looking at their fight, but like you said, it also looked like, and I didn't even think about this, but you're right, it looked like he was waiting there,
like
in a bad pro wrestling match when you can tell they're waiting for the guy
exactly
to spin
like
around
that.
And pull the move on him.
And I think part of it was because this is season two; they've done better choreography previously. Let me rephrase that. I actually think the intent of the choreography was there, which is why there are moments where it is super awesome. But then I think the problem may have been, this is just a guess, that they weren't used to dealing with choreographing so many people at once.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of people involved in this whole
dance,
it seemed that they kept getting confused.
They did. And that's one of the things I thought it was cool because it was ambitious, because we've seen a lot of Star Trek fights, but they're usually on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
I like
Kirk fighting one alien guy. That's what they do at the end here.
Yeah,
basically,
right.
they make it all one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
one person at a time.
And in like Amok time, he had to fight his friend, lover this time. But I think I was just impressed with how ambitious it was. Now, in terms of a fight looking awesome, honestly, like I get a little tired of when fights are a little over the top. I liked there was this sort of trend that happened in the last. I attribute it to like the popularity of MMA, but the fight scenes in movies and shows and stuff got more like practical as time has gone on, because we realize like those kinds of moves, we have the internet, we've seen UFC, we all know that, you know, the shit that they do in the 80s isn't gonna fucking work, so it's not believable anymore. So I appreciate now that the fights have these more realistic moves, and I actually really like that. I don't think it's more boring, I think it makes it draws me in more. But when it's something like pre-90s or something, like I still like, it's a time that we can't. Well, maybe we can go back to, but I appreciate it given the time it lived in.
I think we've gone back to it in a sense in Lower Decks. Lower Decks is using the old Star Trek fighting style.
They are, and they can do that.
It works in the animated format.
And it works in what the goal of that show is. One of the goals of that show is to sort of like...
Which is to be awesome.
Is to be awesome and referencey, but also awesome. But Yeah, just because something doesn't work if it came out new. Like, if that fight came out now, I'd be like, fuck that. But like,
it'd be kind of awesome if it was like literally the same level of quality.
That would actually loop around. It'd be awesome again. But there's a possibility of loving an old period of time, but recognizing that that's not going to work today. But you can still appreciate it from back
then. Well, it's also all about the natural limitations of not just the time period itself, but also the limited budget, the limited amount of time people had to produce shows. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what they were able to accomplish. And it's also simultaneously not surprising that from time to time, you can have some pretty hilarious, goofy stuff.
Like I think it was either Shauna or Kirk that like swung the spear thing. It must've been Kirk. Oh no, Shauna. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. They swung the spear thing. And instead of actually stabbing, they like used it to hit one of the guys with like the side of the spear or something. It's like, why didn't you just slice him? And they did that thing where it's all slow when you're fighting with your friends as kids and you pretend to like hit him, where you all slow down right before you hit him, so it looks all weak.
Well, and that's what it mostly reminded me of. And I don't mean this in a pejorative sense. It's part of what made it fun for me, is it really looked like a lot of kids just kind of running around having fun.
Yeah.
And occasionally being replaced by their obvious stunt people. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least Kirk, you know.
Yeah, there was at least one scene. I might have been actually the hip toss on that one, or maybe it wasn't, but there was some scene where you could tell it was like some other square jawed kind of guy. Yeah. Like it wasn't Kirk looking.
Yeah. Shatner had, I always forget the fella's name, but there was, I guess there were a few stunt people, but there was one in particular who shows up a lot. And
they don't even try to flashes. Hide it.
No, sometimes they don't try. I mean, again, it's a TV schedule. They're filming 14 hours a day. Yeah. They're just getting as much done as they can.
Yeah, that's true. Cause it's like so blatantly obvious sometimes, but for the most part, I'm pretty impressed with how much like stage combat shit William Shatner did, because he didn't do all of it. Of course he got stunt doubles for part of it, but there was some stuff he did that was pretty cool.
It's one of those things where the meme is to clown on Shatner / Kirk fight styles, which they do to some degree.
You said doo-doo.
In Lower Decks, but of course in a fun way, because it is awesome. It doesn't make sense to grasp your hands into a fist and smash somebody in the face, because you just break all your fingers.
And it takes away, you break your fingers, and it takes away literally the power that your punch gives. Power from your punch comes from like, it's like swinging a bat. It's like your hips and your shoulders and shit. And when you grasp your hands together, you have no hip or shoulder power. It's just your arms kind of wagging around.
It evokes a certain degree of strength and violence, even if it's absurd in reality. And I'm just fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
okay with that.
It's fine.
I'm not okay with everything else in this episode.
Yeah.
But the fight scenes are good.
I will say, as bad as they were, I was one of the, for something like that, I was like totally entertained by all the fight stuff. I thought, I was like, whether it was silly or awesome, I was completely like soaking it all in. I can understand, though, Jesse, why some people would be like, ugh, enough of this shit.
Well, and so that's the other thing. I mean, that's getting to one of my critiques of the episode was, I think it's a really cool idea. I think a lot of cool ideas sort of discussed in this episode. We'll go through a few of them. But it also seemed like not enough idea stretched over like a full, long, over 50-minute episode. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there was the whole Spock on the Enterprise part.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
Which I had to watch it a couple times to even, I barely remember what happens with the Spock stuff, because it's sort of standard stuff. None of the individual scenes on the Enterprise, that portion of the episode where the Enterprise is trying to effect a rescue, first by finding Kirk and Uhura and Chekhov, and then eventually trying to, you know, sort out, which they don't really do in the end. It's helpful that they show up, but I don't want to be too harsh on this story, other than it was just okay. Yeah. Spock. And
yeah.
They're fighting a little bit. And then there's like a joke about mutiny that they play the cute music.
Yeah.
Even though everyone can hear them. And,
yeah.
I don't know. It was just not that interesting. And because the A story was also dragging a bit, that with the B story that is a total drag, in my view.
Wait, which are you calling the B story is Spock and company, right?
I think the B story, even though it's necessary in some sense of like, of course you want to show how the Enterprise makes their way there, it's just sort of uninteresting what goes on
nothing really come. I mean, they followed an ionization trail, and then of course they did this again, which they've done before, where of course like Spock is all calm and Bones is all pissed off that Spock is calm. because Bones like only understands if people are emotional. That's only the only way they know they give a shit. And after all this time with Vulcans, he somehow still doesn't get this that Spock is like, I'm emotionless. I think this is going to help the situation better to go logical. It's not that I don't give a shit. It's that like, I think that's not helpful. And I get that that's a cool sort of the dichotomy, of course, between Bones and Spock, of course, but that got a little much. It's just like, okay, another episode where Spock like has control of the ship and McCoy the whole time is giving him shit and the whole time,
the whole time
Spock is just like trying to like keep him at bay and eventually like, loses his temper, but like kind of like Spock had a couple moments. One with McCoy. He says, "We shall continue sensor scans, Doctor. At the moment, this is all we can do, except hope for a rational explanation." And then Bones is like, "Hope? I thought that was a human failing." And then Spock's like, "True, Doctor. Constant exposure does result in a certain degree of contamination." So that was like Spock, like, exactly. I don't know if I have that riff. I would be surprised if I didn't. But yeah, it's that one. And with Scotty, like, Scott was all like, it doesn't make sense that they could have come this far. If there's any chance this is really exciting, me fucking up lines. If there's any chance at all, it is to continue to search in the area they were lost. And Spock says, "We searched the area." And then Scotty says, "It's always possible to miss something." And then Spock goes, "Such as a failure in the transporter mechanism," implying that Scotty fucking fucked up. And then Scotty's like, "No, sir, there was no sign of failure," which is, Scotty getting all indignant.
There was no sign of failure.
Yeah, that was him being all indignant. And so, like, that's how the sort of how these episodes go with Spock versus McCoy is eventually at some point, like, he has to, like, tell Bones to chill the fuck out or he's going to, like, court-martial him, essentially, which is what he did with this episode. Eventually, he, like, was like, "You guys are being mutinous." And Scotty got in on the action. But it was interesting to see sort of the difference between how Scotty and McCoy dealt with Spock, because both of them were questioning Spock equally. Both of them are like, "We don't think you're right." But Scotty was kind of like polite about it. Even when you could tell he was angry, he was still being polite and respectful. Well, but Bones just immediately jumps to like, "You pointy-eared motherfucker." Like, which we get it. I know that that's how their relationship works.
Scotty
Scotty
was getting annoyed with Spock when Spock had that great line, which was something along the lines of, "I assume you mean in a manner not consistent with the ordinary operation of the transporter." Yes. And Scotty was like, "What the fuck, man?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I know the difference. I know the difference between the normal transporter sound and that alien bong effect. That standard, like, oh, it's some alien transporter, and it goes like bong. Yeah, exactly. That's great. I do like that effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that at the beginning when Scotty, was just like got all pissed off.
There were
he gave Scott Spock some lip.
Spock. There were aspects of the Spock storyline or the Enterprise storyline, I should say, that I did dig. One of them was I liked that they had semi-rando ensign person come up with an idea and be like, "Yo, I figured out some crazy shit." And Spock was like, "Whoa, check this crazy shit out. You're right." And I always like when Star Trek does that when it's not the main people, because it's so often on Star Trek, and certainly on lots of other shows, it's you got your main people. Data comes up with a solution, or Geordi. It's wonderful when they have some rando engineer or whatever be like, this number's a little off, and they're like, that could be blah 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 blah, and that's what happened here. And particularly nice that it was a woman who was giving the advice on the bridge crew. Another thing that wouldn't be special to point out, except this was in 1968.
And
that was special.
And I guess originally they did want both Majel Barrett and Leonard Nimoy as like they wanted Majel Barrett to be the number
one. She was
going to
be the first officer.
And then first officer, and then Spock was going to be the alien. And the execs were like, "You got to pick one. There's too much craziness for the American public to handle. Alien and a woman." As the story goes,
I don't even think the story is you got to pick one. I think the story is like you got to kick the broad to the curb.
I mean, as the story,
people won't take the broad seriously.
Right. I mean,
they'll take the devil man seriously. They'll just think he's from a different country or something.
The quote I heard was saying you had to choose, and he chose. But you could be right that it was that's just being nice.
Either way, they still dealt with a lot of bullshit back then, and there's a lot in this episode where it's like, yes, it's a quote unquote progressive show, but not entirely.
No,
for example, when forget about all the Kirk using flirting as a escape gag, like when he's all like, "Yes, on Earth, men and women,
yes,
touch each other,
yes,
they live together, they help each other, they help. I want to show you how I can help you, baby."
What was that line? Yeah, there was some line about like love between men and men and women.
Yeah, do you have the one where she's all like, what is love?
Yeah, so he goes, on Earth, we select our own mate, someone we care for. On Earth, men and women live together, help each other, make each other happier. Well, I mean, that's, I guess...
But just men and
yeah,
women.
Just... But I mean, I guess that's one of those things of, I guess that was part of the time, but it doesn't make it right, obviously. But, like, I don't know what you're supposed to do about stuff like that.
What does he say that men and women do together?
He says, on Earth, men and women live together, help each other, make each other happy. So on Earth, we select our own mate, someone we should care for, being like it's supposed to be men and women.
And then what's the part where he says about love?
You're talking about this?
What is love?
Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
Well done.
I thought you had that clip come up because you kept asking about it.
I did, and I was going to play it, but then you played it.
Yeah, I got to it quicker.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me.
I have the beginning part. I think mine is better.
Right. I think it is.
So you play, because yours doesn't start with the what is love part.
It does on somebody else, does it?
Right. Baby, don't hurt me.
Okay, I get what you're doing. Don't so yours, aha. No, so you and I have taken different comedic tacts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your comedic tact was to have her what is love be the initiation, take the place of the beginning of the song.
Yes.
And then so it's her what is love, and then the song follows from that point forward, whereas I thought it was funny to just play the song because she's like, what is love? And then, you know.
Right, so I'm going to do the first part. You do the second part.
Okay.
What is love?
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me.
I mean, they're both fine.
What is love? No more.
What a groovy tune.
Yeah. Oh, you have like the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Don't hurt me. You know what I did? No more. I did a Google search, and I said, what is love? And MP3. And after fighting through some ads and some scammers and some hackers,
I downloaded this.
All right. Let's not get a copyright strike this week.
What is...
Just
love.
For the purpose
Baby,
of the
don't
joke.
Hurt me. Don't hurt me. No more.
Bomb, 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 bomb. No, that's it. What's going on here? Oh, no, we're...
Welcome to Triskelion.
All right. You know what that means? All of that means that it is now officially time for a break.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, Jesse. And when we...
Oh, no.
Rest interval.
And when we
15 triceps.
When we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about obedience collars.
Oh, no.
In fiction. And then we'll talk more about this episode in which obedience collars play a role. Be right back. Okay, let's be back.
It's got Hathaway.
We are back from the break. Hello. Hello, everyone. How you doing? Welcome back to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We shall continue sensor scans.
Yes, we shall.
Sensor.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
It's second break fun time. A new accidental feature that we stumbled into and are going to continue for the foreseeable future until we forget.
Yeah, I'm interested about this one.
Second break fun. Obedience collars. That's fun. I like that. That made me feel kind of funny inside.
Contamination.
This is the one. That's the cute music.
Yeah. Classic. Classic cute music. Okay. So a common tool used by oppressors in sci-fi and related media is the obedience collar.
Say that again.
I said, a common tool used by oppressors in sci-fi and related media is the obedience collar. Thank you.
That's interesting. So it is a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm caught a little off guard, I must say, Dan, because I thought this was something everyone knew. And I'm going to cite some examples.
I mean, it's like, well, now that it's brought, like, now that you said that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that is.
A lot of things
do it. I didn't know that, but I didn't.
You keep making Jesse all crack up.
But I didn't know it was like an established thing people talked about. I thought it was just one of those things in your head that you're like, you know what I noticed? That, in my opinion, the day before Thanksgiving is the busiest travel day of the year.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was worth chatting about because.
I think so.
why not? You know, this is an, you know, I was thinking about, okay, they're using collars, and I wanted to know, was this the first time in Star Trek they did it? Because I know they did it multiple times in Star Trek. So I wanted to know both about the history in Star Trek and then the history more generally. So I asked ChatGPT, tell me everything you can about obedience collars in fiction. And hey there, everybody. It's ChatGPT coming at you. It suggests
some wild aquatic fowl.
It suggests that the first example, or no, not necessarily the first, but basically the first that ChatGPT could figure out was in Kurt Vonnegut's Player Piano, which is a story written in 1952 that sort of involves this concept of people who wear collars and are controlled by evil, oppressive, fascist, or whatever forces.
Mm-hmm.
Probably it exists prior to that in some form, but you know, thinking about the remote controlled, I think for me that was the main thing. Something is remote controlled in some fashion, so that might be the first one. It was also used in Escape from New York.
What about Escape from LA?
I don't know, because I didn't watch that because people said it sucked.
It was
and
bad.
I think, didn't he have to do like a surfing jump or something?
Yeah, he had to do a
end?
Surfing thing. Yeah,
it was like
surfed.
A jump the shark kind of moment.
And it was like just the beginning of CGI, and they didn't quite have the budget to, they wanted to do, the reason they did the CGI, this was at the beginning of when they did CGI because it was cheaper, and they still do that, obviously, but this was at the very beginning, so they had like helicopters and CGI, which they do now, but they look okay. They can look good, okay, for the most part. It's always nicer to have a real one, but like, it looks okay. Back then, this helicopter, it just looked like this sort of like this weird
nonsense
blob that was like very like going across this line across the screen, and then the surfing was all CGI, and it was just so terrible looking.
Okay, well,
what year was this? L.A. Escape from L.A. That's not even what we're talking about. I always go on this tangent about Escape from L.A.
You know what, Dan? It is not what we're talking about.
I always, when you bring up Escape from New York, I always go on a tangent about Escape from L.A. You know,
I've noticed that.
It was 1996. Matrix was only like a couple years later, and that was...
Don't start talking about the Matrix.
Oh, okay. I'll let you go.
Don't you start.
I have a pre-populated list here.
Okay.
And it's great if you come up with any of the other... How about this? We'll frame it this way. You seem eager to guess.
No.
So Escape from New York was one example. What's another? There's a famous example, both a movie and a novel, where a shock collar, not a shock collar, a obedience collar is used. A collar that is designed to control the people who wear it.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
No, but that's a good guess.
Gone with the Wind.
No, the answer is The Running Man.
I would not have guessed that.
The Running Man.
I still haven't seen that. I keep
meaning
to.
Oh, you should see it, but the book is good too. Mm-hmm. Stephen King book, written under the pen name Richard Bachman, when he was trying to write a sort of different style of stories under a different pen name. The Running Man. They wear collars where their heads will explode if they go past a certain point. The movie Battle Royale from the year 2000. I haven't seen it. Hunger Games. Apparently the Hunger Games use them. Kingsman had something like this. Kingsman in 2014. Belko Experiment. I didn't see that.
Wait, did you guys say you haven't seen Battle Royale?
I haven't seen Battle Royale. No, the year 2000.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, Battle Royale. I think it's Japanese, isn't it?
I couldn't tell you. It came out in the year 2000. And apparently has
2000.
Obedience things.
That was a good movie.
The other thing that came to mind was that horrible story about that fella, Brian Wells, who was a pizza delivery person. I believe this was 2003. You might remember this, where it was a pizza delivery person who robbed a bank, and they were wearing a collar which they said had a bomb around it.
That wasn't that Shakes the Clown movie with Jeff Fox Goldworthy.
You mean Bobcat Goldthwait? Did you say Jeff Fox Goldworthy?
Yeah, I don't know where I got that from.
No, it's upsetting. That movie may have been inspired by this, but this was a true story where what happened was this guy robs a bank, and then he's out, you know, the cops surround him, and then after a little while, his head explodes.
Oh, cool.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh because it's fucked up. It's such a wild fucking story. It's really worth looking up and reading the whole story. It turns out this lady was trying to kill her husband, and then these other people were involved. It's still, to this day, it's not 100% clear whether Brian Wells, the guy whose head got blown off, was involved or not.
What's that?
Some people say he was involved and was told it was a dud. Other people say that he was just straight up not involved, and they
what the devil's going on?
They were just using him so they wouldn't get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But that's sort of a similar, you know, reminded me of The Running Man. And I think these are the types of things that you can call obedience collars. Like, if your head's going to explode if you do not follow the commands, that's an obedience collar. Mm-hmm. But Star Trek really uses a lot of these, at least according to ChatGPT, which I don't know 100% if it's correct, if it got everything.
Yeah, but sometimes we've learned that it thinks it makes up plots to
it
stories.
It can, yes. It's gotten all sorts of stuff confused. But it suggests that the Gamesters of Triskelion, the episode that we are indeed discussing.
Triskelion.
That this is the first one. But then, of course, Spock's brain, which we discussed a while back. I can't remember. Was that last year? But regardless, Spock's brain. There's also a device used to control somebody.
Oh, wait. Which is the one?
That counts.
But the Spock's brain, is that the one where they, like, his body dies, but his mind, but
they steal his brain.
Yeah.
And then they use some controller thing to control his body. I don't think that counts as an obedience collar myself.
Well, because it's not meant
like
to.
It's more a remote control device.
I mean, it makes his body obedient, but it's not meant to, like, punish or fuck, or, you know.
Yeah.
Fuck someone up.
But in the Omega Glory,
Omega Glory.
I do think that might count, because the Captain Tracy uses obedience collars on the inhabitants of the planet Omega 4 to maintain control over them. The Cloud Minders, I think that's a similar thing. The Troglites, they're the ones who live below. They have obedience collars that control them with shocks if they don't follow an order. ChatGPT also suggested the Game from TNG. I don't think that's an obedience collar, although it did have the purpose of trying to gain people's control. It wasn't a collar, though.
Yeah,
it was a headset.
It was a bit of a stretch, because generally my experience with this term I learned today, that there's a thing, this obedience collar thing. But anytime I've seen obedience collars, now that you bring up this whole issue, I think of something where somebody's directly trying to, like, enslave somebody through force.
Yes.
And, like, the whole thing with the Game was, like, it took a different tact, you know, and the end result was very similar, but it was like they wanted to be in this collar, and it wasn't a collar.
And it wasn't a collar.
It wasn't a collar.
For me, it's
very literal for you.
This is not a collar. There's other ways to You can control people with zaps and mind rays and hypnotism and psychic powers and all that. Those aren't collars either. We're talking about obedience collars.
And they have to be collars.
Yeah. Because it's the same thing. ChatGPT also says chain of command. I don't agree. There's something that causes him pain, but I don't think it's a collar. I think it was more like a...
What about those little monster? Were they called little monster... But they called little monsters those stuffed animals, and it was like a monster stuffed animal, and it had like shackles and like a metal collar, and like, but you could, the shackles, they were monsters, so they were broken.
Yeah.
Like, they were broken. Was that count as an obedience collar? It was an obedience collar that didn't succeed, because nothing can contain little monsters.
But it was also not remotely controlled. I'm really thinking of the obedience collar.
Well, it could have been. They don't specify in the narrative and lore of these little monsters.
Isn't the little monsters
that's actually a movie.
Isn't the little monsters vibe sort of medieval?
Maybe they weren't called Little Monsters. I know there was a movie.
Are you talking about Boglins?
No, I'm not talking about Boglins. With Fred Savage, there was a movie called Little Monsters. I don't know. It was some kind of stuffed. I don't know, man. But they did have a medieval feel to it.
And you're sure you're not talking about Boglins?
I'm positive I'm not. Because those are not stuffed animals. Those are little booby bobs.
they're little rubber puppets.
Yeah, exactly. These were actually stuffed creatures. And now I'm obsessed with what these things were actually called.
Wow. All right. ChatGPT also mentions the Chute from Star Trek Voyager. Which
my pet monster. That's what it's called.
My pet monster. I don't know about that, Dan. I don't know about that, Dan. Anyway, that's obedience collars. I'm guessing ChatGPT. I'm getting the AI didn't get it all correct. I'm sure. So let us know. Write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or on social media @itsgotstartrek with the movies and TV shows, Star Trek or otherwise, that have obedience collars, remotely controlled, mind you. Mm-hmm. Remotely controlled obedience collars, mind you. None of this headset bullshit. Not a tie.
It's a literal collar.
Not a tie. Not an obedience jacket.
An obedience jacket.
Not an obedience hat.
That's called a suit and tie is an obedience jacket.
I'm right there with you, Dan.
Yeah.
Right there with you. Not to get all political.
Right. Not to. No politics here, guys. No politics. No politics.
Just Star Trek.
Yeah, right. This is absurd.
Okay. What we were saying. Yes.
Stuff.
You let us know if there's other examples that we missed. Then we'll talk about it maybe at some point. We're not. Or maybe we won't. Just find out.
Nah.
There's only one way you're going to find out. By interacting with us via communication method. That sound, that little music, that little riff by Dan.
Fascinating.
Means that it's time to get back to the old show.
Yeah.
There is no objection.
All right, so that means we got to get ready to go. It's time to get to the show. The Gamesters of Triskelion. I'm giving you a beat, man.
301 blues.
You can do that again.
All right.
Provider 2, 350 quad blues. 1,000 quad blues.
1,000 quad blues coming right at you.
1,050
quad blues.
1,000 quad blues.
Goddamn right.
2,000.
Provider 2, 350 quatloos.
300 quatloos.
You are a fine specimen.
1,050 quatloos. Provider 2, 350 quatloos.
Planet.
2,000.
Provider 3, 400. 1,050 quatloos.
The devil with the providers.
Triskelion. 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 Triskelion.
Gamma 2.
Gamma 2.
That's very kind of you, miss, but...
Gamma 2. Gamma 2.
For their limited mental abilities.
I'm called Lars.
What do you want from her?
The term is easier for their limited mental abilities to comprehend. For their limited mental abilities.
Rest interval 15 triseconds.
Excellent, Captain Kirk. I have been sent to welcome you.
The newcomers have been vended.
Any further disobedience, now that you are full-fledged thralls, will be punishable by death.
Yes! Yes! Death! Thralls! Full-fledged fucking thralls!
Gamma 2.
That's our friend Chekhov, right?
Yeah,
Chekhov. It was great. This is so stupid.
I am Tamun.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I don't even know what to make of that whole.
I am called Tamun.
Tamun business. Okay, so yes.
That was supposed to be like the comic relief part of the episode, which was also weird.
It was uncomfortable and upsetting. Yeah. That was a legacy of the time. Especially it's mirrored with the whole situation with Uhura, I'm very confused. I want to know what your guys' view of this Uhura situation is.
So, okay. This whole episode of like, first the comic relief with Tamun and then the Uhura situation. And then like his whole, like, you know, there's this focus on men and women, you know, need to make
and
each
the
other
Uhura situation comes first.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, on the one hand, like, yes, that's fucked up. But on the other hand, I don't want to give it a pass. But Star Trek for the time was known to be progressive, and yet they still had these kind of notions. So what am I supposed to, as living now, how am I supposed to look at that?
Well,
you know,
okay. I think always it's always important that, you know, media does have to be looked at through the lens which it came from. You know, I, that doesn't mean you have to like it or continue consuming that media. I think it's perfectly fine. There's some media where it's like, you know what? It's all good. We don't need that anymore.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Or use it as teaching moments or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it can be tricky when you encounter some of these stories. And you're trying to parse out exactly what they were going for. I think another important reminder, like we were discussing earlier, it's a TV show. So, and they were filming crazy stuff. And not only was it in the 60s, it was low budget. It was it was impressive what they were able to get out.
Yeah.
But starting with the horror thing, because I think that's the important
thing. Yeah, that one is, that was really fucking weird.
It's firstly, it was really upsetting. It was an upsetting scene because the implication that this man is trying to rape Uhura.
Right.
And we're hearing her scream in what sounds like a very serious and upsetting fashion.
Yeah.
I think where 1960s Star Trek thinks they're being progressive is by zooming in on Captain Kirk and having him say, like, "What are you doing to Uhura?" And I think
you're killing her. Well,
not that part, but
I think that is the part.
No.
Where he's reaching towards the jail cell and he's like looking into the screen.
You're killing her is with Shana. Shana when she's being punished for giving him information.
Okay.
I assure you of this.
I'm just trying to figure out what it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Oh, I just want to mention that, by the way, I didn't record any sounds of like the horror scene other than.
No, of course not.
Because like that was, I was like, okay. Just so nobody has to worry that that's going to like pop up. Wouldn't it be funny if I played one right now? And I was like, see?
rape. No, it was a very upsetting scene.
You're right about that. You're killing her. I'm trying to remember what it is he said. Oh, I think he just said like Uhura.
What are you doing to Uhura? I think.
Yeah.
Which makes it more upsetting, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's we come back and she's still screaming. Mm-hmm. And then we see the guy. So it's like a act break, right? Basically. So it goes to commercial. First of all, that's really weird and fucked up.
Yeah.
That is like, okay.
There was some weird breaks.
One of the officers appears to be like, there's at the minimum an attempted sexual assault going on here.
At minimum.
Commercial time, sell some cigarettes and washing powder. And then they come back. And then isn't there the part with Spock again for a little bit before it comes back to even this part? I forget exactly. Kirk is still upset. And he's like, "What's going on? You still hear Uhura screaming?" The guy comes out, and then he's like, "The guy, all the guy says is, you're not allowed to say no in this scenario. You're not allowed to say no." I forget exactly how he phrases it in some silly, weird way, where he's like, "You've been selected for me, and it is not permitted to say to
refuse
the selection or whatever."
Kirk's like, "Lieutenant, are you all right?" Et cetera, et cetera. And then Lars is like, "It is not allowed to refuse selection."
Yeah, so. I'm hoping that the intent, clumsy as it is, I'm hoping that the intent there that we're supposed to take away is that Uhura was successful in rejecting his advances.
You know,
he did not expect to be declined in this fashion, and so he's going to go complain to Galt or whoever now.
Yeah,
and that. That was the limit of this particular
and to support
situation.
To support that, I'm on Chakotea.net looking at the script, and in parentheses, after it says it is not allowed to refuse selection, in parentheses it says, and I don't know if that was an editorial note from Chakotea.net or if it was he got some version of the script that actually said that, but in parentheses it says he leaves, Uhura's clothes are intact. So I was like, why is that there? I guess to imply that she wasn't.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that as a canon because it's too upsetting to consider an alternative, particularly as how they treated everything was like, oh, well, it's fine now.
Yeah.
It was already, even given the situation, things got to, it's again, it's the nature of TV is sometimes things get back to normal too quickly when people suffer incredible trauma. This is something that Star Trek Discovery deals with much better. And other modern Star Treks where they're like, oh, somebody got pretty fucked up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Deep Space Nine did it a little bit too, but more recent Star Trek, I think, has been really good about actually being like, oh, this person went through some shit and now there's repercussions.
It's still a little...
Here, there's no repercussions. Everything's like good to go.
Well, it's still questionable about the whole Jurati situation in Picard, like how she ended up, you know, being a But they wrote that away with alien mind control because they murdered her mentor or whatever, and so they,
I get what you said, but by and large, a lot of characters they have trauma, and then it's stuff that's dealt with, even Girardi. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I mean, you can, it's possible to disagree with that assessment. I think in relative speaking in relative terms to like this is an example of like 1960s era Star Trek. But you know, again, you just have to be like, okay, I'm going to parse that out over here.
Yeah.
It's then complicated by the fact that then they have this whole scene with Chekhov and Tamun.
Yeah.
Which is, like you said,
I am only your drill throb.
Like you said, Dan, this is clearly intended to be the comic relief.
Yeah.
Except it's a mirror of what happened to Uhura, where Uhura was sexually assaulted.
Yes.
And now you have the same scenario, or at least Chekhov is fearing the same scenario. And the fulcrum of the joke is that, isn't it funny that he's afraid that this big, strong woman's going to rape him?
Yeah, right.
Like, he's worried about that, and so he's going, woo, 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 woo.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean,
that's very kind of you, miss. But
it is funny, because they're playing the funny music, and Chekhov is going, woo, 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 woo.
Yeah.
And of course, it turns out that she's not trying to be aggressive with him. She's like, oh no, I'm just your trainer, but you're really, I'm digging you. I think you're cool. But yeah, but then they play the romantic music, and that's a little upsetting too.
Well, I think they explained, which was also interesting, that she was his drill sergeant, drill thrall.
Yes.
He hadn't been selected for her, but she was hoping that he would get selected for her. And the same was true with Kirk, where Shauna was his drill thrall, and she was hoping, well, I don't know, it wasn't stated what with that situation, but in both, the only one that was selected was Uhura was selected for Lars, but the other two weren't selected yet, which I thought was kind of a weird choice to make one selected and the other two not selected.
What you've done is you've highlighted one of the many hundreds of inconsistencies in the world building in this episode, which I do think impacts the episode somewhat. Because that is one too, because later when Chekhov is worried about being quote unquote selected, she's all like, no, you don't get selected until after we figure out who buys you and all that other stuff. I'd be cool with it, but it's not that time yet. Apparently that wasn't true, you know, with Lars, or that Lars is just a shithead.
Yeah.
He's a rapist. Right. I mean, so maybe he didn't care about the rule. You could argue that, I guess. But
that's not really how they presented it.
Exactly. So. And there are a lot of other inconsistencies. Like, for example, there's some stuff that's just peculiar. Like, right at the beginning of the episode, they're on the fighting ring, whatever they call it. What did they call that? The tricorn hat? What was it with the weird swastika-ish kind
of
thing?
I don't know. Was there a name for that thing?
I think they called it the arena or something.
It might have been like the arena.
I wish I could remember.
All I remember is like the sort of weird rules that didn't make any sense about the final
fight. So that's where they appear, right? They're all like, bong, 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 and then they appear. And then there's this next scene where they chain them up. They put them in irons on the wall. And then Galt says, you are now ready for training. And then a minute later, they take them out and lead them to their cages. Why'd they do that?
I don't know.
Why didn't they just put them in their cages?
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
This doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Right? Right?
It was some kind of like intermediary, like, we're going to fuck you up with this for a while and then we'll put you somewhere else. But we want to like leave you in this place.
Another example, a little later in the episode, is when Kirk wants to take the fall for like Uhura is refusing a command. So they want to punish her. And so Kirk nobly comes in and says, well, I'm responsible for my crew, so I'll take the punishment. And Kirk is told, you can either take the collar or you can take the punishment. And then he says, okay, I'll take the punishment. And then the guy's like, yeah, because it hurts less than the collar. But then it turns out the punishment is that he's going to die in battle.
Yeah, because Galt says, it's a shame to lose you, Captain, after he decides the punishment. Right. And
that's confusing.
And that's confusing. It's also confusing, like death by what? By whip? That's all that guy was going to, like, whip him to death? And on top of it, it doesn't make any sense, because then, like, then they can't sell him for like 2,000 quatloos or whatever. Like, and he was talking about how great he was, like, so in like Galt was like, "You're good, you're feisty, we like you, you're gonna be worth a lot of money." And it's like, well, of course he's gonna be need to be punished because like he's feisty. The reason you like him is because he's feisty. It's like that thing that makes him good in battle is also the same thing that's gonna make him difficult to deal with for you. Yeah. You know, so you gotta the whole thing was weird and inconsistent.
And there was one final major inconsistency, which confused me, which was at the end of the episode. And tell me if I'm interpreting this incorrectly. The bet was that he's going to fight, Kirk was going to fight three of the chosen people.
Yes, yes, yes.
He fights three of the chosen people and defeats them all. Mm-hmm. And then they send Shauna in.
Yep.
And they act as if the fight is still going, but it's like, no, he already won the bet at that point.
Yeah, he did.
So why did they, it didn't, I know it's dramatic to have him fighting the woman that he's now presumably made a connection with. After punching her in the face.
Oh my God.
What a progressive show. I know. First you kiss him, then you punch him. You remember that when Kirk kissed the lady and then he clocked her in the jaw.
Okay.
Well, and he was like, "I'm so sorry."
Well, okay. So first
I'm so sorry.
I want to go back to, we'll go to that in a second. But I want to go back to that because that was fucking like,
cocky in the jaw.
That one like hit me. I was like, whoa, when that happened.
I love you, baby.
But the rules that he made with the brain people, the protectors, the little brain piles, was like he was like, okay, we'll make this bet, right?
Right.
Each of my people against each of your people, and they were like, okay, well, how about this? Just you against all of our people. So already, like, this is a fucked up bet. And then,
but at least they're still at the negotiating stage. And it's not like they changed the bet on him. They were like, here's our counter offer.
Yeah.
It's just like later adding in the fourth person. That's just cheating.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was a counter offer. They were still negotiating, and that was cheating. And not only that, the only way to win is by killing the other people.
The only way to win is not to play.
Is by killing the other people. And so Shauna was able to surrender for some reason. Also, so not only was Shauna allowed to like enter the battle, he wasn't forced to kill her. Part of the terms were you have to kill them. And she was able to surrender, and that was enough. So not only was she allowed to enter the battle, she wasn't subject to this killing rule. The whole thing didn't make any fucking sense. And
the other thing also was is even though you could consider it a form of cheating, Kirk could have just said, like, "Hey, thralls, I made a bet with these brain monsters that like if I beat you, you guys go free. You want to go free?" Now, it might not work on all of them, but might make a couple of them think and be like, "Hey, I'll just lie down here."
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I don't know why they didn't think of that.
It's almost never a bad idea to lie down someplace.
And number one,
maybe on the train track.
One who was, I believe, the green brain after Kirk beat her, he said, "You have won, Captain Kirk, unfortunately. However, he says, however, the terms of the wager will be honored. You are free. Remove your collar." So now he's like, oh, well, it's like you've already broken the terms of the agreement with this fight, but now you're agreeing to them? Like, you already broke it. Why not just continue being an asshole about it, you know? But now you're acting like, oh, we made a deal. A deal's a deal. So that was just inconsistent.
We shook tendrils on it.
Tendrils?
Yeah, I don't know what a brain has to shake.
Yeah, I don't either know. What did Krang do? He had like little...
He had little tendrils.
He had little tentacles.
That's probably what I'm thinking. I'm probably thinking Krang style.
Probably thinking Krang style.
Krang style brains. Okay.
Wait, this is... Wait.
See, I'm sorry, Shauna.
Here's the beginning. Here, listen close.
Punch.
Here's a listen close at the beginning.
Feminism.
When that happened, I was like, what the fuck, man?
That's the type of feminism you get from 50-year-old men who smoke a lot of cigarettes.
And that was after, oh my God, that was after there was a bunch of weird like kissing and flirting, and like he was sort of like, what was it? Wasn't there some part where she was like talking about how she felt strangely? Like after like they...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's 1960s TV talk that she got the butterflies, you know, the dancing butterflies, you know, like the little worms, little glow worms.
Little glow worms.
Yeah, they did that on Big Mouth. It was a whole glow worm, glow worm business.
Oh, yeah. Kirk goes, "You're disturbed by what happened today." And she's like, "Yes, you have made me feel strangely. If it were allowed, I would ask that you get another drill thrall." And so, like, that's something like, speaking of molesters, that's kind of like a molestery thing to say, right? Is to say, well, maybe I'll use a different word than molester. casually throw that term around.
Then molestery?
Yeah, just someone, a predator. I'll call him a predator. That's all a predator thing to say, is when he's like, you're disturbed about what happened today. Like, trying to feel him out, be like, for them to say, like.
Or how about the party? He's like, you want to know what beautiful is, and then he holds up the tray. He's like, "That's beautiful."
Oh yeah, that's right. He did do that. Yeah, and then she goes, I would ask that you have another drill throw. And he's like, I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like that at all. And then he fucking punches her in the face. He kisses her first, yeah, and then he fucking punches her in the face.
The order is very clear. It's kiss, then punch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's similar to when you're doing a podcast. The order is talk, then break.
And he starts with... That was weird. I pulled some stuff on you. I pulled a move on you earlier. You feel weird about that? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, you can't go away. I need you. And she's like, okay. And then he kisses her. He's like, oh, this is great, baby. Hey,
Jesse.
And then he fucking punches her.
Jesse, Dan didn't get my accent.
No,
I did get it. You want to go to... I know, I did get it.
You didn't hear my whole, clever segue.
I heard it, and I was
clever and charming.
I wasn't done yet. That's my... I wasn't done.
I get it.
I wasn't done yet.
All right. We will be done in the near future, but not until we return from this upcoming break. The break is happening right now. Be right back. And we're back. Hey. Wow. Hey, everybody. How's it hanging? You want to know a fact? You want to know a third break fact?
Third rate fact?
No, not a third rate fact. A third break fact.
Oh.
A third break fact. Say that three times fast. Third break fact.
I will not do it.
Third break fact.
I will not do it.
This third break fact is brought to you by the Oxford English Dictionary, if you would believe it. And what that fact is that the term gamester, I'm going to make this into a guessing game. When do you think that the term gamester was coined? Because I was not familiar with this term.
I kept thinking it was Game Stars. The Game Stars. That's what I fucked the title up. I didn't think it was Treskelon. I thought it was the Game Stars.
It could be that it originated in this episode. It could be that it's a 1920s slang. I don't know. I had to look it up. So what do you all think? What do you think is the origin of the term gamester? Because they do mention it, I guess, a couple times in this episode beyond the title.
I don't know. It's either like some kind of like, it's, yeah, I mean, it seems like some kind of like 30s, like, hey, you.
What do you think, Jesse?
I got a Tommy gun, you know, that kind of thing. I'm a gamester with a Tommy gun, you.
Yeah, something like in the 20s or something.
It's probably from like 500 BC or something, right?
No, but not too far off. It turns out, at least according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the first recorded reference to gamester is in 1549.
Game Star. Oh, shit.
1549. And it was specifically in reference to gambling, somebody who is associated with gambling.
A gamester.
Apparently, this term sort of evolved in the 1940s into gamesman. And so that's sort of a term that, referred to an association with gambling at different levels. But yes, gamester. Occasionally also used to be associated with sex workers for reasons unknown. But generally not. Generally, gamester refers to somebody who is gambling.
Okay, which is what these providers were. They were eons of evolution made them little brain piles, but for all their superior intellect, all they do now is like to bet on sports. That's apparently what happens when you become so smart. All you do with your time is bet on sports.
And I have a question. Do you think from Kirk's little speech at the end, where he keeps talking about how this is an unproductive purpose, and he's like, this doesn't suit your massive intellects, is this like a screed against professional sports?
I don't know. It was weird.
Ostensibly, the primary message is that they're just wasting their time gambling and enslaving people, Rome, you know, just sort of like ancient Rome, like with gladiators or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, I guess that's the overt analogy, but it feels hard to ignore Kirk saying, like, why are you bothering with a bunch of athletic stuff? Why don't you just solve problems or whatever?
I mean, that is not an uncommon thing that people sort of lean on, is this idea that, like, you know, we have to focus on our brain, our minds, and perfect our minds and shed our bodily needs and stuff like that, which I don't agree with that.
I don't know. I guess the thing is, I don't know how many people actually think the whole shedding of the body part, as opposed to like, no, the body and the mind can be awesome together.
Well, no, there are a lot there. Trust me, there's a lot of people out there who, a lot of people, you haven't met them, but I have. Let me tell you one thing. No, there is this idea that some sort of, you know, some spiritual routes take where they're like, you know, the body is just basically like holding us back, and it's our purpose to sort of overcome the needs of the body and focus on them. I don't know. It's some weird stuff that I'm not, I mean, whatever. You know.
The brains thing was kind of funny, just generically, like the whole idea They're just like these fluffy pulsating brains, which I thought the effect worked very well.
Yeah, I thought they looked cool. Two was the green one, three was the yellow one, and one is the red one.
They just have this, the whole color thing is, it's like, it's just also really funny to think that's how they evolved. They evolved to be like, I'm going to be the red one.
Well, they did have a purple prison bars, I remember, hot purple prison bars.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, an interesting color style.
But yeah, it's funny. It's like, well, we're just brains. How's anyone going to tell us apart? I know, we'll be so smart that will turn blue and red and yellow. It was like I got nothing against betting on sports. I have in the past been known to bet on
sport or two. I was just curious if that's what this episode was getting at.
And I enjoy sports myself. It's just funny to me, the idea of thinking about like eons of evolution and now all they do is bet on sports, which is a fine activity. It just seems like you'd also have some other things in your life as well. Yeah. But maybe it's making a point that, well, you don't have any bodies anymore, so like, what good are you? That's what it's saying.
It also shows that the malleability.
Which I think that's a fucked up thing to say, though, too. Is to say like, well, you don't have bodies, so what do you? All you do is bet on sports because you. Which seems like that would be some kind of ableist kind of bullshit. I don't know.
You could read it. There's a malleability to the interpretation because you certainly could look at it as saying, hey, all this is a system of exploitation up and down the line, and at the top of it are these disembodied bodies, brains manipulating all of it for the exchange of money. That when you think about it, what the hell do these people need with money? What are they using the money on? Are they spending it off world someplace? Like, what are they doing?
Primary mental evolution.
That's what they're doing with all their money.
Yeah. They even said actually they disagreed with him.
Oh yeah, they did.
Which was weird. I don't know, because I think he was describing exactly what they ended up describing, but I don't know. It's all made up.
He goes, that is not true, Captain. Once we had humanoid form, but we evolved beyond it. Which is also interesting. They were saying we too had humanoid form. We evolved beyond it. But it's still thought of other things, other humanoids, as lesser, inferior creatures. And it's like, well, you used to be one of us, but you evolved off from it. So why couldn't everyone else do the same thing, evolve from it? Like, why? For all their intelligence, they still look at other people as lesser life forms. It's like, you're an example of why they aren't lesser life forms, because you were the same before. You just evolved beyond it. And even Kirk points that out. Even Kirk is all like, he says, like, perhaps you're not as advanced as you think you are.
They clearly aren't, because they fell for every single one of his little psychological gags.
Yeah.
Like all of his schoolyard gags worked. He was like, you guys are chicken. I bet you guys can't do shit. Fuck you guys. And they're all like, no, man, fuck you.
Yeah. He was pulling out like, I bet you guys.
He's like, you guys are weak.
I would tell you, but you wouldn't like it. But yeah, no, Kirk actually says, we found that all life forms in the galaxy are capable of superior development. And so like, which they should have figured out since they were like, I don't know, but whatever, I guess, like, that it is true, though, that just because you're intelligent doesn't mean you don't have some fucking stupid ideas, you know?
What, you know what's not a stupid idea?
Taking a break?
No.
Did I get it?
No, you didn't. Because it's not time to take a break. We're done with breaks.
What the devil's going on?
The next thing that happens is... is we end the show.
What?
We're soon we'll end the show. No.
What?
What?
It's too early.
No, we're not ending the show yet.
Why are we ending the show?
We're not...
In fact,
we're doing a real good job of extending the show.
Stop it! No, sir.
I was saying, what is not a bad idea is the idea of Quatloos. Quatloos just sounds cool.
1,050 Quatloos.
And Quatloos is so hilarious and awesome that has essentially become a generic term for like sci-fi money or made-up money. It's like Quatloos. It's just we're just making up some bullshit, right?
Yeah, Quatloos.
Quatloos.
Oh, another example. Now you bring up Quatloos.
It's like Fizbin, which happens there's the next episode up is after this episode. The next episode after this is a boss. Piece of the action.
The boss.
Which we discussed in episode in the backward times, back in the day.
And for all their intelligence, they couldn't figure out how to negotiate properly, because when they were negotiating on the battle between, I guess, Kirk and Shauna, or maybe it was Kirk at the beginning. I don't know. At some point they were wagering on a battle. It was at the near the end of the episodes. It was near the beginning. Shit, I totally lost where this is. There was one part where they were
Dan the Vampin Man. Dan.
Okay,
Dan.
Here it is. This is halfway through the episode.
He's gonna find the notes. Where he's going to read the notes.
Well, I'm just looking through the script to find
he's going to convey the thought that he wants to convey.
Okay, this is right after... No, I was looking at the script. This is right after Kirk pulled... Okay, this is another thing, is he pulled the move to take out Quaalude. No, to take out Klug. He pulled the classic move where you, like, the little guy jumps on the big guy's back and chokes him out from behind. That happened in A Princess Bride.
It did happen in A Princess Bride.
And it probably happened elsewhere, too.
With Andre the Giant.
But so they were betting on... They were, like, trying to negotiate to buy Kirk, right? And it starts... It goes, one bids 300 Quaalude, and then two bids 350 Quaalude, right? Quaalude, and then three bids bids 400 Quaalude, and then it jumps up to fucking 1,000 Quaalude, and then 1,050, and then 2,000. Like, they're not, they're, and then it goes, oh, yeah.
Have you ever been to an auction, Dan?
And here's even a better one. 2,000 Quaalude is a jizz. The new government, we're free people. We love to be such spirit. Okay, now they're okay. This is when they're wagering. I think this is actually the one where they're wagering on Kirk. He goes, I wager 15 Quaalude. Oh, this is after he got bought. They're making a new bet. They're saying, 15 Quaalude that he's untrainable. And then the other guy's like, 20 Quaalude that all three of them are untrainable. And then two jumps to 5,000 Quaalude that he will be destroyed. They jump from 15 to 20 to 5,000 Quaalude. That is not a good negotiation tactic. You don't jump from 15 to 20 straight to 5,000. That's not how negotiation works. Like, if you want to make a big bet, like, be like, okay, 100, but like 5,000, like, I think they're degenerate. They're like, they have like a gambling problem. I mean, I don't want to say that if you have a gambling addiction, you're degenerate. I'm just saying, like,
I mean, but that's exactly what you just said. You said, I think that they're degenerate.
Okay. So I think what I meant to say is they have a gambling addiction, as that's what they all have, is they all have gambling addictions. And they get this rush out of like betting and selling all these Quaalude because they don't have body rushes anymore. So they have to like,
rush.
So they have to like, get high on like gambling, and you know, and that's the thing, is if you're super smart, doesn't matter how smart you are, you can have some ideas that are like, doesn't make sense, like really shady ideas, which they do. And you can also have like with the evolution stuff, and then you can also like still be subject to various forms of addiction. So that's kind of like, maybe it was very like, you know, like a public service kind of saying, like, it doesn't matter how smart you are. Look at these smart brains. They're so smart, but they still suffer the same issues that we face in our society. You have a lot of smart people coming up with a lot of like terrible ideas. And then you have other people who are smart and good people, maybe, except not the providers. They were not good. But like, you can have
they were someone, degenerate.
You can have smart people that still have addictions. So maybe it was just like a really socially a mindful episode.
I would just like to
except for the raping part.
I would just like to make a point to the audience that sort of all that stuff that Dan just said there, that's for free. You get that for free. Do you know how much other people would charge for that sort of advice? Like the whole the advice on bidding, where you don't go from 20 to 5,000.
He's making fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm trying to, I just want to make sure that the audience knows the value that we are providing in podcast form.
How can one live on a flicker of light?
That's right. What is love? Baby, don't bad,
bad. Bad, bad, bad. What is love? Love.
Gamma 2, Gamma 2, Gamma 2.
Quite loose. Don't lose all your Quaalude.
Now that you are full-fledged thrall,
Triskelion
will be perishable by death.
15 strike, Captain Kirk.
I have been sent to welcome you.
And we've been welcomed, even though we're so close to the end. It's a fun time. Yeah, I will say the whole thing with the brains getting off on enslaving people and betting on them and for meaningless money. It hits very close to home. It's just sometimes it feels like, oh, this is not much of an analogy at all. This is just normal, good old fashioned, the way the world works sometimes. Yeah. It's
right.
All fucked up.
Yeah.
It's super fucked
and
up.
The problem is like, with the brains, you could kind of see that they were making a commentary on it because of Kirk's response to them and stuff like that. And like you said, they're messed up because, like, yeah, they gamble on on people they've enslaved. But then there's the other scenes like we talked about with like Tamun and Uhura and stuff like that. That's stuff that happens in the real world, but they didn't make a commentary on it as if it was like they were just like, yeah, shit happens, you know? And so it was like half sort of, it's like they didn't realize at the time that what they were doing was like shady. But yeah, you're right. It's like they mirrored the whole what goes on, but they only made commentary about like one part of it. The other part, you're like, well, but what about that? You know, I don't know.
What about that?
We still don't know. I looked up primary mental evolution, and all you get is links about Star Trek.
Like, and it's specifically about the gamesters of Triskelion.
Yeah, right. It's the gamesters of Triskelion. It's not a thing. I can kind of guess what it means, but like it does. It's not like a thing. It's an interesting term they kind of came up with.
Do we know anything about Gald, the sparkly vampire guy?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
what's his deal?
He looks like a Dracula.
Yeah, it was just wearing a Dracula outfit.
They just
put a bunch of glitter on it.
I like saying that thing that someone looks like a Dracula. That's one of my favorite things.
Like a Dracula.
Yeah, like a Dracula. You'd say a vampire, or you'd say like he looks like Dracula, but you wouldn't say he looks like a Dracula. This is another lesson from me that you're getting for free.
I would like a few more examples.
You wouldn't say,
car 54, where are you?
This one, here's a lesson for you.
You will be practice target.
You wouldn't say it like that. You would say you will be a practice target. But they were saying like, you are now known as practice target. That's what they were saying. They weren't saying you're going to be our practice target or a practice target. It just said,
you will be practice target.
So that means what? From henceforth, hey, practice target, come over here.
Hey, practice target. Hey, how's it going?
Duggan target.
Oh, I get no respect at all from the practice target. What was the purpose of the training harnesses? They made them put on these training harnesses.
Are you talking about like...
Kirk and Uhura. Uhura had a silver one. Kirk and Chekhov had...
Well, Shana was wearing something that like I think we've seen in other Star Trek episodes. Haven't we seen that sort of silvery kind of...
Oh, that was our old friend Kara Zandera on social media. When we posted the notice that we were going to be watching this episode, she commented, "It's got baked potatoes."
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Which I thought was really, really, really funny.
The training harnesses.
We haven't seen this costume before. Not that I recall. It's evocative of other Star Trek costumes in the sense that what the costume designer, his name is slipping my mind at the
Smith
moment.
Johnson.
I really don't recall. He was famous.
Jeremy Fogelby.
He was famous for being able to dress women in as little fabric as possible while still technically adhering to all the rules. For example, you'll notice Shana, you never see her belly button. Her belly button is covered, but you see there's whole cutouts on her thighs and hip area.
And this is going to sound like kind of gross when I say it, but you see
I like it when you say gross stuff.
You see that joining of where her hip joins, like the top of her thigh joins with her stomach, that whole area. I know, it sounds so gross I say that.
No. It's just that the audience at home doesn't have the benefit of you miming all the...
imagine it on me right here.
Dan is leaning back, sort of coyly twisting his leg at me, and being like, right here.
Right.
This area right here.
Yeah, and it's like, and to me, that's like much more like, I don't know. I shouldn't have walked into this pit. It's making me sound like a pervert because what
it's a sexy costume.
To me, like, yeah, that is more like explicit than showing a belly button. Like, who cares about a belly button?
But yes, of course it's more explicit, but that's the gag.
It's not a gag. It's just the rules of it's a gag in that they circumvented the rules and somehow made it like
Which
even more
fun.
Like
there's a certain fun, even though, yes, I know in some cases it's not the best when it's purely exploitative.
Purely
exploitative. But I do respect the creativity of being able to work around network sensors and get stuff. And by the way, that's what Star Trek is as a whole, right? Using the sci-fi format to trick network sensors and executives, et cetera, into being able to get these very progressive stories about racism and sexism and all sorts of technology.
Is not permitted.
And war and all these things through by using this format. So this is just another aspect of that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Speaking of zaps.
Zaps!
There were a bunch of zaps in this episode.
What do you mean zaps?
Like when they you know, the part when it went.
Oh, yeah.
There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 warpy zaps.
You want to play all 7 of them?
Well, I don't have the sounds because they weren't.
Do you
all...
have one warpy zap?
Well, it was this.
And you just do that 7 times in a row. It's almost like one of them grandfather clocks or something.
Yeah. So when they beamed out, this is narratively important, because when they beamed out of the ship, you'll notice they zapped. They didn't get transported. That was before we even knew what was happening. That was a clue that they weren't transported because they just disappeared instead of beeping away. And also because the transport, what's weird is when they zap away, the background moves because they're doing that thing where they record it and they take them away and they record it again and the background moves a little bit. But that doesn't happen during normal transporting special effects. When they fade out, it looks fine.
Yeah.
But when they would do that thing where they appear
the camera
and they're
gone, wiggles.
The camera wiggles. And I'm curious actually about how that special effect works, because I get why the camera moves when they zap away, because it's just not quite aligned right.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder how do they do the transporting so that doesn't happen? I'm curious. I will get back to you.
all right, Dan's gonna look that up.
Yeah, and then when they appeared on the battle mat, that all moved around, and then when Galt would appear behind him, that was the third one, and then when he uses blue eyes on the collar on Kirk to make it appear, that was a zap. When they're making out and Galt zapped in again and harasses them, that was another zap. They're escaping and Galt zaps into the place in front of the gate. It's mostly the zaps are him zapping around and the background moves. And I felt the biggest offender of the moving zap jolt was when Kirk zapped back onto the battle arena and at the very end. And it was like the arena must have moved, like the camera must have, like it was about 3 or 4 feet of movement. Like
no,
it was like you
like,
guys
why?
Did not even try to do this. Like, do you have like something that holds things still, or do you have some guy like being held by his feet, like, you know, holding a camera? I don't know. Seemed like they could have done that one a little better.
I think they could have done a lot of things.
Couldn't
better.
They just cut the film or something and stuck it together? You know, or
maybe they didn't have time. They had to turn this stuff in, show it on TV. And never consider that it was going to be re-aired later necessarily.
That's true.
That's how TV was for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a good point, because they didn't have to think about people re-watching it and critiquing it, you know?
And all remastered in high definition where you can see everything very clearly. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, where the weapons looked really plasticky and very blunt, which is not always the case. It's just some weeks, it's just like, oh, they were in a rush to get this weapon. Any other major points or odds and ends or bits and bobbles?
I thought it was interesting. So Spock, they were talking about like them like being transported away, and they were talking about like, can he live this long? Can they live this long with their atoms all blown apart like this? And Spock is all like, you know, fascinating and intriguing, blah, 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 blah. That he should have called, what he should have done, Spock should have done, is called up M'Benga and asked him about that whole thing.
Yeah, I was thinking that Spock either didn't remember.
Yeah, he must have forgot.
M'Benga's thing, or he was being coy so as to not reveal the secret
to McCoy. I like the second one better.
He was being coy to McCoy.
Yeah, he was. But that was lying.
Spock was frequently
But that would be a lie, and Vulcans don't lie.
See, Dan is being sarcastic, but it's maybe not coming across. We know that Vulcans lie.
They say they don't lie.
Vulcans say a bunch of nonsense.
It's funny that Bones is all mad at Spock because he's intrigued by the idea of living in it. It's like they're like looking for Kirk, and he's like, oh, that's interesting. Thinking about like, can they live in it? And Bones is, of course, like, you fucking asshole.
You piece of shit.
Are you interested in something right now? We gotta be doing this, because whatever you're doing is taking
you
away
green-blooded,
time.
Sexy motherfucker.
Yeah, it was weird. They just like, they flew away, and then Scotty and Bones were like, why are we flying away? We just want to stay in this place.
Yeah.
It's like, what was that gonna help, staying in the same place? Like, that, I guess that Kirk would just appear?
Well, and I would argue that probably, because I felt the same way, but when
Kirk
I thought about it,
check off in Uhura.
When I thought about it, I was like, why am I aggravated by Scotty and McCoy being so desperate to be like, no, let's keep looking here. And I realized it's because we've watched 50, 60 years of Star Trek since this. So we like know for a fact that the anomaly is the right way to go, and you chase the anomaly.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're immediately on Spock's side, whereas I could see an audience at the time being like, no, Scotty and McCoy are correct. They should keep looking for Kirk.
It makes me think of a situation that I remember happening where somebody I knew, this is none of you guys, I'm not going to reveal who it is. It's not scandalous or weird.
Is this right? about pooping? Is there a weird
poop? No. There's no reason not to say who
poop
it is.
Poop is not involved.
Look, it's just a whatever story. It's not even like a story. It's just something that relates.
It's an anecdote?
Yes, that relates to what we're talking about, and it's very short. It's very short.
All right, it's a short anecdote.
Someone was a baby, and they had like something in their eye. They started freaking out because there's something was in their eye, and then both the parents were like, one of them, and they were on a highway, and this is true story. I'm not making up this scenario.
So they were on the highway,
and this baby starts freaking out because
baby's freaking out. Is the baby in a car seat?
Yeah, it's in the car seat. It must have got something in its eye or something because it's like going nuts, right? And so one of the parents is like, we should get off the highway now and find a hospital. But the other parent is like, no, we should stay on the highway because that way you have more options. When you're on the highway, you can look and find a place to go. But once you get off the highway, you don't know if there's going to be anything. And so that's kind of like the same thing that they were going through in a way, because one person was like, let's get off the highway and get away. And then the other person was like, no, we need to keep looking around here some more. Or I guess you could say the other person was like, the highway is a location.
It's one of those analogies where you could really look at it either way.
Yeah, because
diminishes the value of the analogy.
No, because think of the highway as them staying in place. Even though the highway, you're moving very fast and covering much more distance, the highway is its own location. And that's equivalent to Spock and Scotty wanting to stay in the same place to keep looking. But like, when you're just sitting looking, at some point you have to take action and do something. Of course, don't want to do something for the sake of doing something, but at some point you have to do something. And so that would be getting off the highway, is to be like, oh, let's go there. Let's see what's down that path. We don't know. And then they're saying, but we don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's not a great analogy, but it makes sense to me.
Okay. Again, it's a free podcast, folks. Hey, Dan, why don't you play a bunch of sound effects and we'll close down the show.
Of course I mean that. You think I'd call you if I just been down? Of course I mean that.
The reverse controls. I made all the proper checks.
Of Triskelion. It was a good discussion, mostly, for the most part.
What did we do wrong?
It's a free podcast. Just remember that, folks. 100% free.
I think Patrick is passively, aggressively criticizing me.
No, everything's great.
There was no flash of light. Nothing.
Next
nothing.
Week.
Nothing.
We don't
nothing.
Know yet what we're discussing.
They were gone.
Our website is itsgotstartrek.com.
Powers.
And there you can find what we're going to be discussing next week.
Of course I mean that. You think I'd call you if they just beamed down?
You can also find us on social media at itsgotstartrek. And we also, yes, we'll announce what we're going to be talking about next week. Who knows? I don't know what we'll be discussing. It'll be some sort of Star Trek TV show, probably. That's my best guess.
Is easier for their limited mental abilities. For their limited mental abilities.
There'll be more of this and a little bit more
for their
of that.
For their limited mental abilities.
See, it's good to put that at the end so as not to like turn people off at the beginning and being like, oh, there's going to be like 90 minutes of this.
Yeah. Yeah, only about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, follow the social media to find out what we're going to discuss next week. And in the meantime, we hope you have just a grand old wonderful time.
Oh, man, shit.
What?
I did have a game I wanted to play, but I guess it's too late for that.
It's too late for the game. Maybe next week.
We're not going anywhere until we have some information. Who are you? What is this place?
The game is, can you guess where the sound was cut? Maybe the audience can think about it.
All right.
We're not going anywhere until we have some information. Who are you? What is this place?
I cut up this file, and you have to guess where the cut happens.
Okay, well, you people have one whole week to think of that.
We're not going anywhere until we have some information. Who are you? What is this place?
You have to guess where I cut it.
Okay. We just write it right into feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
No cheating.
Or at itsgotstartrek on social media. Where did Dan cut that clip? I don't know how you're going to describe it to us in the subject line or on the social media, but if it makes sense to you, just write in. Let us know. Otherwise, that'll do it for us this week. Wish you all the best. Talk to you next week.
I will learn and watch the lights in the sky and remember.
So serious. Anyway, talk to you later. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.
I didn't realize I was so hungry. Whatever you call this was very good.
It is nourishment. We call it that.
Nourishment. Well, that's very practical.